Nick and Jake. A nostalgic look back at those halcyon days of the McCarthy era. A journey through literature and history, starring Alan Arkin, Tom Conti, and Ally McGraw. Previously on Nick and Jake, Nick took a stand.
Nothing must go into this newspaper that will do discredit to Jake Barnes. Do you understand me?
Ronnie knew what she wanted.
I do want to smother you with kisses.
Introducing in this episode,
Albert Camus, author and philosopher. Another French intellectual absurdly eager to champion Nick.
Maurice Chevalier, May 5th, 1953, by messenger. General Salan. The message in today's column has been cleverly concealed, but it appears to be embedded in the list of the obscure names at the end of the column. Bud Powell, Sidney Bechet, Blossom Dearie. If these are American entertainers, I am a resistance fighter. None of them has ever appeared at the Folies Bergère, I can assure you. And that last name on the list is surely the coded reference to message 273. We look forward to the spring when we take our loved ones to see the cherry blossoms open along the Potomac. Translation, forget France. Devote all your efforts to suppressing those towel-headed colonials in Algiers. Be as brutal as possible to the bastards. Vive la phalange, Maurice Chevalier.
May 6, 1953, from Nicholas Carraway, Hotel de Lorient, Paris, to Jake Barnes, University Clinic, Copenhagen. Arrive Copenhagen tomorrow. Stop. Be packed and ready to roll. Nick.
Jake Barnes, Copenhagen, Denmark, May 6, 1953. Dear Chris, Nick did me proud. He found that one true sentence and went on from there. I did send him the documents. I wasn't going to. I used them as leverage on the bastard Dulles, and in return I told him to go no farther than me. But I started getting a strange feeling in the old short hairs. There was a tap on my phone, and I'm pretty sure somebody was reading my mail. So I decided to let Nick decide what to do with the documents, and as you can see, he went his own way. It felt like a valedictory, didn't it? Disillusion can set in hard once it sets in. I don't know if our boy is ever going back to America. Well, I know what that feels like, don't I? Sympathetic desire, eh? Could be. I've been getting those same feelings, too. The old pneumatic pump is working the way it ought to, pending the real test. Nick is picking up in the morning, and we'll be heading south. Get ready for the corrida. Love and anticipation, Jake.
Albert Camus, Paris, May 8, 1953. My dear Carraway, a magnificent article. You capture the existential failure of the nascent American Empire succinctly and brilliantly. I hope it will be the first of many. I would like to see you writing a regular column for Libération. Say the word, and I will approach the editor. Camus. Thank you.
United States Information Agency, 20 Rue Lacépède, Paris, 5e, France. May 10th. Dear Ronnie, I returned to Paris this afternoon to find your wonderful letter and a parcel from you at the hotel. A letter from you is always occasion for excitement, but a parcel? I tore it open with impatient fingers to find your record. Of course, I don't have a record player, but there's one at the USIA library, and that is where I've been ever since. I've been tucked away in the audio booth for the last 3 hours, listening to you over and over again, and I still can't believe it. My God, Ronnie, where did it come from? You always had a voice, but I swear, hearing you do the show's theme song, Snickle Poo and Me and You, never prepared me for where you've gone with it. There are emotions threaded through your delivery that I don't think I ever felt until I heard you sing these songs. I almost feel criminal now, locking you into that kiddie show for 3 years when there was this artist waiting to burst out. My God, Ronnie, my God. Time and distance are measures I can't quite put into perspective these days. I feel I've been gone for years, not months. The distance between us seems more like light years than the few paltry thousand miles that either of us could annihilate in a matter of hours with an airplane ticket. What's been happening to us, Ronnie? Is there anything left in you of the pigtailed young woman I hired in Chicago? Is there anything left in me of the pompous, stuffed shirt who pushed that contract across the desk at you? I wonder this because I want desperately to see you, Ronnie, and at the same time, nothing I've ever contemplated has scared me more. I keep telling myself I don't really know this girl, well, this woman. And as the song goes, how can you lose what you've never owned? But I feel as if I can lose, and lose a lot, and it may be more painful than I'm ready to risk. There are many reasons for this fear. Our ages, of course, and habits and tastes and experiences, and a jester's pouch of others. I'd be lying to myself and you if I didn't admit that there is one issue that scares me more than all the others. It's a small thing in a way, and yet it casts a shadow I may not be able to overcome. It seems to have been a problem in my marriage, although one I was never aware of until the end, and since, in which time Marjorie has not stinted in drawing it to my attention. It's a thing I could never address in a letter, and yet that may be the only way to do it, because I know I'll never be able to broach it in person. So here's what I'm going to do. I've just returned to Paris after my drive down from Denmark with Jake. I dropped him off yesterday at a little inn along the Normandy coast. Pretty sure he had an assignation lined up, but he was being damn mysterious about it. In fact, he still hasn't told me what his business in Copenhagen was, but I have the feeling he was getting hold of something important. There's a different quality to him, Ronnie, a kind of swagger I've never seen in Jake before, and I don't yet know what to make of it, but that's for another letter. What I'm going to do now is tear out a few pages of my journal from the trip and include them here. I wrote these entries for myself, so they address the subject with a lack of self-consciousness that I could never manage if I were telling the story directly to you. There are words in it I would never use in front of a young lady, and I'm mortified to put them in front of you. But I feel this is something too important to avoid. If this offends you, I understand. I wouldn't expect to hear from you for a while, and if, after some time, you feel like picking up our correspondence again as if nothing had happened, and keeping the distance and relationship between us as it has been, a sort of confessional exchange between a middle-aged man and his young protege, I will willingly slip back into that harness. So, read it, and if necessary, weep. The reassurance Jake offers me here on this matter of my agonizing uncertainty is not the point. He calls it a matter of perspective. His is one thing, Marjorie's another. The one that will matter is yours. With love, Nick.
Nick and Jake was written and directed by Jonathan Richards and Tad Richards, with music by Dave Grusin. Featured in the cast were Alan Arkin as Jake Barnes, Tom Conti as Nick Carraway, Pascal Aubier as Maurice Chevalier, and Pierre-Yves Desmonceaux as Albert Camus. Tune in next time to hear Jake say,
"There's nothing wrong with the size of your cock, she's jerking your chain."